This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Sisters 1, 2, 3 by Nancy Starr, performed by Cassandra Campbell. For Larry. Prologue. Ginger Tangle had nothing against nature. She often stopped to notice the sky, clouds particularly, but also hawks circling and the dissipating puffy trails of planes. But today was different. Today, in the parking lot at the summit of Mount Washington, as she gazed at the granite ledges perched over sheer drops only inches from where her disgruntled teenage daughter stood, what she felt was hypertension. She could hear it, her heartbeat pulsing in her ears. Yes, she had noticed the rough-hewn scenic overlook arrows, so quaint and welcoming as they pointed toward views that, yes, were expansive. But what held her gaze were the chasms. Had no one stopped to consider the possible outcomes of placing photo-op elevation markers and telescopes lined up like promises on top of boulders where the wind often turned hurricane force without warning? Was Ginger worried Julia might get blown off by a sudden gale, or worse, impulsively leap? No, it wasn't like that. But an overly bold and defiant skip to the edge? An eyes-on-the-phone clumsy stumble and fall? Accidents happened. Ginger knew this better than most. The Mount Washington trip had been a last-minute addition to their New England college tour itinerary. An opportunity for family bonding, after what Ginger had predicted would be a long and difficult week. Second thoughts had set in at once. Her research confirmed her gut. Her wilderness side trip idea had possibly fatal flaws. She ticked them off for her husband, Richard. Moose on the roads, bear in the woods, and in the air, according to an alert on the CDC site bookmarked on her computer, mosquito-borne eastern equine encephalitis. As if that wasn't enough, the weather on the summit was notoriously unpredictable. Snow squalls happened in July. Richard saw it a different way. A moose sighting would be awesome. You already packed bug spray. I checked the weather. It's going to be hot. Day one of the college tour, Julia, tall and bony, all elbows and knees, exited their car like an awkward shorebird and announced, "No way!" The sun peeking out from between the rolling mountains of Vermont made her red hair look on fire, but her mood remained morose. "Middle of nowhere," she said, from a spot so beautifully landscaped it felt more park than parking lot. "Not going here." Dumbstruck by the way the pink light hit the stone buildings, Ginger had pressed on. "Why don't you poke around a little before you decide? You never know. Worst case scenario, you tell your friends at home I was mean to make you look." Ginger had realized her mistake immediately. Of course, Julia would not be sharing this with her friends at home. This was the summer she'd dumped her friends in a trade down for a boy named Nick. Day two. Online at the snack bar of a large university in the middle of Boston. Ginger, lost in thought, wondering why the frozen yogurt machine was placed alongside the lunch offerings instead of the desserts. Julia had announced college wasn't for everyone. "Some people do better just being out in the world." "You mean no college ever?" Ginger asked. "Or a gap year?" Julia stepped off the yogurt line. "Just because you don't go to college doesn't mean you don't have a life." She headed toward the exit sign. Ginger grabbed two bananas, paid for them, and followed her family out. That night, in their Boston chain hotel, Richard went to the front desk to track down the hypoallergenic pillows the room brochure advertised as available upon request, while Ginger lay in bed staring at the ceiling. A greatest hits reel featuring Julia's boyfriend running in a loop through her brain. Nick in high school, 1 year older than Julia, a senior, Did tech for the drama club. Also did music. Sound collage, Julia said, whatever that was. First choice for college? Ringling Brothers Clown School. Plan B if that didn't work out? There was none. Result of neglecting to find out in a timely way that the clown school no longer existed? A gap year. Nick after high school. Job right after graduation. Starbucks. Duration of employment, half a day. Reason for termination, according to Julia. Refusal to be fake cheerful. Other refusal, coming to the door to pick Julia up. Preferred parental avoidance technique. Texting from the car. Ginger's first sighting of Nick was on a stealth visit to his next job, at an independent coffee shop where fake cheer was not required. She assessed his appeal while online. Tall, rangy, kind of good-looking. Acne that might clear up if he'd keep his hair off his forehead. Furniture, tack-style earrings creeping up his cartilage. Too unpleasant to look at. When it was her turn to order, she asked for coffee with room for milk. Her generous interpretation of why Nick overfilled her cup so much that black liquid sloshed on the counter? The place was noisy and the boy couldn't hear. The time it took for Ginger to figure out what Nick meant in dollars when he rang her up and said, "That will be 314 cents." Just under a minute. Duration of Nick's independent coffee shop job? 4 days. Reason for termination, according to Julia? Owner had no sense of humor. The hotel room door opened, startling her. Richard was back. No pillow.
Turns out they only have one kind.
Thanks for checking. She reached for her eye drops. Richard sat down on the chair next to the bed.
Listen, I was thinking about you and Julia. Maybe it would help if you backed off a little. Not saying it's your fault, just maybe if you back off, she'll back off.
He shrugged and smiled.
Worth a try?
She softened. This was how it went with them. Richard was a congenital optimist who got over things faster than anyone she'd ever known. She was a worrier with a dedicated pitfall-first view of the world. Most of the time, the combination made for good balance. But all the sparring with Julia was starting to wear her down. The balance was not holding. Day 3. A small liberal arts college in an idyllic Massachusetts town. Another no-go. Mission unaccomplished, they piled into the car and set off for their fun overnight. Outside, the sun beat down. But in the car, the mood stayed dark. In the distance, the inn loomed from the mountaintop like something out of a horror movie. Ginger had picked this inn because of its close proximity to good hiking. But it had the additional benefit, she'd learned from the colleague who'd recommended it, of being off the grid. Neither cell phones nor internet a match for the mountains of the presidential range. Julia cursed from the back seat. Weak service discovered.
My phone has no bars. Does yours have bars?
Ginger checked as if she didn't know.
Nope, but I think we'll survive. It's only for 24 hours. What am I supposed to do without a phone?
Richard glanced in the rearview mirror.
Bet you anything, they have Scrabble.
The innkeeper led his silent guests up a crooked flight of stairs to two rooms that felt perfect for slow cooking a roast. Ginger sat on the bed and fanned her face with her hands while Richard moved to open the windows. The innkeeper stopped him.
No use doing that now. Mountain air conditioning is you open the windows at night and close them in the morning. Open them now, it'll only get worse.
He read Ginger's expression.
I'll find you folks a fan.
As soon as the innkeeper left, Ginger got up and opened the windows herself. But the hot breeze that lifted up the edge of the doily on the painted dresser brought no relief. She glanced across the hall. Too hot to bother closing her door, Julia lay collapsed on her bed. Ginger could see her daughter's dirty white sneakers splayed across the nubby blush coverlet.
Julia had no idea how much bacteria there was on the bottom of shoes. Few people did. Ginger knew this because in addition to being an elementary school nurse, she taught a night class at the adult school, Nurse Tangle's danger class, and one of the topics she covered was hidden dangers, shoes and purses. Purses were the worst. The places women put them, first on the sink in a public toilet, then on the kitchen counter.
Jules, take off your shoes, Ginger called.
Julia's feet came off the bed and her door slammed shut. A moment later, it swung back open. She stormed into her parents' room.
Are you trying to kill me? The thingy on my desk says the internet is down.
That's annoying, Ginger said.
Want to...
No. This time when Julia slammed her door, it rattled the glass tray that sat atop the dresser doily in her parents' room. At dinner time, Ginger walked across the hall and knocked.
Jules, we're going down. Jules?
She pressed her ear to the door. Nothing. She turned the knob and made a mental note to warn her daughter that it was important to lock her door when she went away to college. Sleeping, eyes closed, hair fanned out around her head, Julia looked sweet. Did sleep make everyone look sweet? Was she sleeping?
Ginger put her palm in front of her daughter's mouth to feel for breath. What are you doing?
Julia pushed her hand away. Ginger laughed at herself. Making sure you're alive? Julia blinked and a scrim descended.
Not funny.
So this was how it would go. It's dinner time. Dad's waiting downstairs.
Not hungry.
She shut her eyes hard, the way she did as a child when she wanted something to go away.
They stop serving at 8.
Ginger scanned Julia's face for signs of an eating disorder, but saw none. She checked her watch.
I'll call in 20 minutes. Try not to fall back.
I'm not coming. She pulled the blanket up over her head.
You look like a corpse. Can you even breathe?
No answer.
I give up,
Ginger said, as if that was a possibility, and went down to join Richard at the table set for 3. In the morning, in the breakfast room on the screened-in porch facing the mountain range, Julia shoveled in her omelet. Since when did she like spinach in her eggs? Pushed away her plate and proposed a change in activity. Except Ginger had already mapped out the route to the summit from the parking lot. She had even written down the number of steps from the tunnel to the first viewing platform. Plans like that were not meant to be discarded.
Change to what?
Swimming. That's what people do when it's hot. The housekeeping girl told me where to go. She's my age. She's so awesome. Look. She unfolded a trail map.
I got this at the front desk.
She pointed. Emerald Pond is the closest swimming hole. It's only a few minutes from where you park. The water is totally clear. You just climb up these big rocks and jump in. Even old people do it. It's deep, she added for her mother's benefit. So we won't break our necks. And it's not the ocean. This was also for her mother. Ginger did not go in the ocean. Jumping into a mountain pool was something she could conceivably do. Except for the part about the big rocks.
No! Top 3 causes of spinal cord injury? Car crash, gunshot, diving into mountain pools.
This was more or less true.
It's a different climate on the summit. Even on a hot day, it's cold. I guarantee you'll be happy we went.
Julia started to protest, but Richard interrupted.
Mom spent a lot of time planning this. How about we give her a chance? You never know. We might have fun.
It was a pale attempt at support, Ginger thought. But Julia agreed, so she took it. When they got to the parking lot, Richard turned off the car, and Julia read the temperature gauge on the dashboard.
Only 92 degrees.
Good work, Mom.
This isn't the summit, Ginger said. You'll see. It'll be cold up there.
Outside of the car, she fished around in her backpack and found three hats, blue and green beanies she'd bought at a store in North Conway. She put hers on and handed out the others. Julia held her hat like it was toxic, thumb and forefinger only.
What is this?
Okay. Ginger would try it Richard's way. Back off, ignore the bait, ignore the question.
See the walkway? It's just past that bus.
Julia pressed her lips together. She pressed them so hard they seemed to disappear.
What?
Ginger heard the bite in her voice and tried again, kinder.
What?
Julia turned to her father. It's 90 degrees.
I'm supposed to wear a wool hat that looks like the earth? Mom snaps at me, what? And then pretends she has no idea what's wrong?
It was a perfect and stinging imitation.
The hat is for wind, Ginger explained. Summer weight, the man at the store said.
The man at the store was deranged, and if you think I'm putting that on my head, you're deranged.
Julia got back in the car. Ginger felt Richard come close behind her. He gave her a hug and spoke into her hair.
Please let it go.
At work, he was a bulldog, fearless and resolute. But at home, Richard could not tolerate confrontation. This, Ginger suspected, was a side effect of his having lost both parents at a young age. Sudden deaths, car accident for his mother, heart attack for his father, preceded by garden-variety arguments about tracking mud on a clean floor and forgetting to pick up a rotisserie chicken for dinner, arguments where no one got a chance to make up. Loss and all that went with it was something Ginger understood. She took off her hat.
Forget the hats,
she stuffed it in her backpack.
Getting hats was a dumb idea.
Defiant, Julia put on her hat and pulled it down low. She crossed her arms. A minute later, she took the hat off and got out of the car. She turned to her father.
I feel like I can't breathe.
Are you nauseous?
Ginger handed her a water bottle.
Have a drink. It could be altitude sickness.
We should head down.
It's not the altitude, Julia said. It's you. I can't breathe because of you.
That's when Ginger noticed the ledges. What was she thinking, picking a place like this? Julia looked at her phone.
I'm going to the bathroom. I'll meet you on top. And don't worry, I won't get lost. There's signs everywhere. I couldn't get lost if I wanted to.
Why would you want to?
Ginger asked. She felt Richard's hand on her shoulder.
Okay, meet you up top.
They walked slowly through the short tunnel. Water dripped down the walls on either side. Children screamed nonsense words to make echoes. Ginger leaned into Richard and asked,
Did you know it would be this hard?
He shook his head.
And we only have one. Imagine if we had two, or three or four. How in the world did your mother manage with four kids?
Pure instinct made Ginger turn around. She let out a soft moan. Julia was there, right behind them, listening.
Four kids? Grandma Glory had two kids, you and Aunt Mimi.
Ginger felt her knees buckle. She quickly laid a hand against the wet wall to steady herself. Why had Richard said that? He knew this was a conversation she did not want to have. Now she had no choice but to answer.
I had a brother. He died.
What? When? How?
We were little.
Ginger took a breath.
There was an accident.
Richard added,
This is hard for Mom to talk about.
Wait, you said Grandma had four kids.
Who's the fourth?
Ginger had worked hard to avoid this moment, but here it was.
Now all that was left was the question of how much would be enough to share. I have another sister. My baby sister. Your aunt. Aunt Callie. She left home young. Where is she now?
Finally, something Ginger could admit.
I have no idea.
They walked in awkward silence, Ginger on alert for whatever might come next. When they stepped out of the tunnel, the light was blinding. Julia's cheeks looked hot.
I don't get it, Julia said. You're on me all the time about how I shouldn't hide things, how truth is the most important thing on the planet, blah, blah, blah. And now I hear I have an uncle I never heard of who died in some accident you never mentioned, and an aunt who...
She was too mad to finish her sentence. Ginger noticed a vein traversing Julia's forehead.
Take a deep breath, Jules.
Am I going to end up like you? Oh, my God. Am I already like you now?
And Ginger laughed, surprising them all, because it suddenly felt like a practical joke. When Julia was born, there was only one thing Ginger knew for sure. She would not raise her daughter in a family where what was true in the morning turned out by night to be a lie. Yet here she was, rivaling her mother in skills of deception. The weather on the summit was exactly as predicted, even in the middle of a heat wave, freakishly cold. Ginger stuck her hands in her pockets and turned against the wind. Julia walked around to face her.
Anything else I don't know?
That's it, Ginger said. That's everything.
She wasn't lying. She was still a year away from learning the rest. That her brother's accident, the event she'd spent her entire adult life trying to pretend never happened, was not the only catastrophe on that perfect beach day those many years ago. Part 1. Before and After. Chapter 1.
Ginger had no idea she was in trouble until her sister Mimi woke her up and told her so. This was not unusual. One or the other of the Tangle children, there were four in all, was often in trouble, and Mimi was usually the one who knew why. If birth order had counted, it would have been Ginger, the eldest, who dished out the secrets of the world. But in the Tangle house, order came and went in fits and starts. Chaos was far more reliable.
"It's because you're 13, Mimi told her, adding a quick, "Happy birthday," before turning serious again. 13, everyone knows, is bad luck. So when you turn 13, bad luck for a whole year. Nothing you can do.
Information delivered, she darted across the hall to share this alarming announcement with Charlie, their 8-year-old brother, and Callie, the youngest sister, age 6. Now that her bedroom door was open, Ginger could hear the low growl of her mother Glory's voice on attack, followed by the riled-up pitch of her father Solly's reply. The fight was a loud one, which was good news. The quiet fights were trickier. Sometimes the only tip-off was an onion smell, Solly's sighs filling up whatever room he was in with the sour gas of his agitated gut. With the noisy fights, Ginger could scope it out and decide what was best, a targeted interruption or a keep-behind-a-closed-door distance. But it was impossible to know what was best with a fight she didn't even know was going on. Mimi, done with sharing her news flash about Ginger's bad luck, skipped into their room, grabbed her pad, got in bed, and resumed her early morning project, making a birthday card. At least, that's what she said she was doing. To Ginger, it seemed more like an excuse to crumple paper into balls, which she then tossed against walls, window, ceiling, and floor. A stray ball bounced onto Ginger's chest. She was about to complain when her morning dream flashed back.
"You were in my dream," she told Mimi. "You were with me in the kitchen, and I was asking Mom if this year for my birthday, instead of presents, I could get my own room. Nothing personal. she told her sister. Mimi shrugged. She didn't care, and then lobbed another mistake under Ginger's bed. Ginger took the paper ball on her chest and crumpled it hard, making it smaller. Then the kitchen turned into the basement, and you weren't there anymore. I was alone, and something was crawling on me, and I couldn't see what it was, and I couldn't get it off, and I wanted to go back to the kitchen, but the stairs vanished, and I was stuck. She glanced over to see what Mimi made of this, but Mimi had vanished too. A moment later, Ginger heard her clomping up the stairs, followed by the sharp click of her mother's heels on the floor in the hall.
No, Glory was saying. Gingy's not getting her own room, and you're not getting her presents.
She swept in wearing a fickle smile.
Happy birthday, Your Highness. Care to explain where I'm supposed to procure a private bedchamber for you?
There was no point defending herself. It was a dream would not change her mother's response. Their house had 3 bedrooms, 2 parents, 4 kids. There was no attic, and the basement, dirt floor, cracked concrete walls, was unheated. It was the same in every other house on their block. Modest capes with a token patch of lawn that all the fathers mowed in a ballet of synchronized home improvement every Saturday morning. Just as every June they celebrated summer by perfuming the air with tar as they walked up their driveways, buckets in hand, brushing on sealant to cover up cracks. Ginger had heard their New Jersey neighborhood defined as mixed, meaning both policemen and firemen lived there. Neighbors were also teachers and people who sold things, like the man next door, Paul Clark, who sold rugs, and her father who owned a toy business selling overstock and seconds, or, as Glory put it, junk. She watched as her mother pondered the privacy issue.
Unless... the Clarks do have that extra room.
This was because, sadly, the Clarks next door had only one child.
Want me to ask Evelyn if you can move in there?
She didn't wait for an answer.
I didn't think so.
She pivoted and breezed back to the kitchen, where Ginger knew from Mimi she was cooking up a birthday surprise.
If you've got any luck at all,
Mimi said while throwing 3 balled-up sheets of paper against the wall in quick succession.
13 will go fast. At 16, you get a party.
When the kitchen timer rang, Glory called up that the surprise was ready. Ginger stepped lightly on her way down the stairs so as not to leave prints. She stopped in the foyer to listen to what the argument was about. Consciousness-raising groups again.
Why shouldn't I join a group? What are you worried will happen? You think they'll tell me to kick you out? Or make you clean? Maybe vacuum for once? Do you even know where the vacuum is?
Ginger hurried to the kitchen and skid to a stop on the linoleum floor.
Hall closet?
Her father looked up, his brown eyes droopy as a basset hound's. Glory swiveled and beamed.
Look who's here!
In one hand, she held a long serrated knife, in the other, a plate. Her birthday surprise rotation of baked goods was small. None were good, but today's date nut loaf was the booby prize. As usual, the loaf had come out of the tin in pieces, which her mother had tried with modest effort to mush back together into a solid form. The edges were black, but Ginger knew from experience, no matter how burnt the outside, the center would be wet with the taste of rum. Glory extended the offering.
Ta-da!
Thank you. Ginger took the plate, put it down, and smiled. She could smile even while gagging. But Mimi was a wild card. Mimi might decide to pretend to like the date nut loaf. Or she might decide to stuff her face and then spit the mush out in her napkin while making retching noises. On a morning like this, when Glory's mood, Ginger could tell, was brittle, retching noises would not go over well. She scrambled for an idea.
Can I bring this to French class? Did you know Madame Olivier and I have the same birthday? Did you know she loves date nut loaf, too? No kidding. What a coincidence.
Ginger watched carefully to see if she was going to get away with her story. On the plus side, her mother liked the French teacher, who'd complimented her on her accent at parent-teacher night. On the minus side, Ginger had refused her mother's gift. She held her breath. The knife went back in the holder.
Bien.
Glory reclaimed the loaf and covered it up with foil.
Voilà.
She handed it back to Ginger.
Pour madame.
She winked. That wasn't bad, by the way. I give it an 8. Ginger returned the wink with a half-hearted smile. She had only recently noticed that rating lies on a scale of 1 to 10 was not something other mothers did.
My turn, Solly handed Ginger a box. First on the block you're going to be with this one. James Bond action pen. Comes with its own pack of vapor paper. Runs on invisible ink.
Invisible ink, Glory repeated. Let me see, that must mean you got a shipment of pens that don't work. Well done, Emperor of Duds.
In company, Glory boasted that Solly was a toy entrepreneur. But at home, she enjoyed needling him with pet names that were far less flattering. The truth was, in the overstock business, there were a lot of duds. Shipments of CNC where the cows went oink. X-ray specs with only one lens. Pens with no ink.
So they have no ink, Solly said. Do I make a living? Do you have what you need?
Sure, King Khan. Whatever you say.
Solly lumbered out of the kitchen to finish getting ready for work. Glory slid into the chair across from Ginger.
Okay, kiddo. You're 13 now. There's things you need to know.
Usually Ginger could feel it when one of her mother's bursts of confidences was coming on. And she could make it out of the room in time, but now and then she got caught off guard.
For starters, you can write this down if you want. Do not marry someone more than 5 years older. More than 5 years, you can get fooled. When I first met your father, he twirled me over to Roseland twice a week. So suave, I thought. Took me everywhere to dance, even the Savoy up in Harlem. Rumba, samba, foxtrot. He danced them all like a dream. You know he's 6 years older than me, right?
Ginger nodded, and Glory nodded too. Then she snapped her fingers.
Abracadabra, 20 years later I wake up and Mr. Dance Like a Dream has neuromas on both feet and a pair of orthopedic shoes that could fit the Jolly Green Giant.
Ginger closed her eyes and concentrated on chewing her Cocoa Puffs.
Look at me, Gingy. You're 13 now. Dream time's over.
Ginger opened her eyes in time to see her mother sweep out of the room to get last licks on her argument before Solly left for work. The birthday dream of a room of her own must have gotten her mother thinking, because when Ginger came home from school, she saw the first bad luck of her 13th year had arrived in the form of a double-decker bunk where Mimi's bed had been. Callie's possessions now spilled from the bottom mattress onto the floor of what was suddenly called the girls' room.
"Why does Charlie get his own room?"
Mimi asked, even though Ginger told her not to.
"Boys and girls ought not to share bedrooms," Glory explained. "Buck up. You'll love it. You'll be up all night whispering secrets. I'm quite sure I'll regret the whole thing."
It was useless to complain, so Ginger made the best of it with a roll of masking tape and a ruler, which she used to carefully lay down a set of double lines to mark her area. "My side is off limits," she announced, and then went back to her original afternoon plan, gathering her unruly hair on top of her head in a ponytail and sectioning it around 2 coffee cans to make it straight.
"You can sleep with me,"
Charlie told Callie, who was as unhappy as Ginger with the new arrangement.
"You're still small enough to fit in my bed."
"Okay, good."
Callie quickly gathered up her collection of stuffed animals. They were dogs, mostly, different sizes and breeds. She called them her Arleys, having named them in rhyming tributes to her brother, Barley the Lab, Farley the Beagle, Marley the Schnauzer, and so on. In her old room, every night before bedtime, Callie would line up her Arlies, and Charlie would read them a story. But when she asked her new roommate, Mimi, if she'd read to them, Mimi cut her off with a quick, "No way!" Armful of Arlies, Callie walked out of the girls' room into the hall where Glory was waiting. "No more switching of rooms," her mother announced, and the subject was closed. Later that afternoon, Ginger noticed a tall stack of plates on the dining room table. But the family ate dinner in the kitchen. She found her mother fluffing the pillows from the purple sofa in the living room. This gave Ginger pause. The sofa, the plum velvet chairs, the piano no one played, the entire living room was off limits to them, except when company came. "The Clarks," Glory said when Ginger asked. She bent down to brush a spot on the lavender plush carpet where the nap went the wrong way. "I thought it would be fun, celebrating your birthday with the neighbors. And we have a special guest, Casper Diggins, Evelyn's brother. Did you meet him? Oh, I forgot, you didn't work there today." Ginger had a job as a mother's helper for Evelyn Clark. She went over 3 afternoons a week, but because it was her birthday, Evelyn had given her the day off. "Mr. Diggins came all the way from Boston. Your father and I went over last night to meet him. Talk about charming. Of course, the curmudgeon of Essex County doesn't agree. We were there for 5 minutes. Casper couldn't have been nicer, but that was enough for Solly Tangle to decide he disapproves. Be a peach, Gingy. Help me move my puzzle upstairs so we can set the table." Jigsaw puzzles were Glory's hobby. She built them using upside-down game boards as the base, so that if necessary, like tonight, they could be moved. The current puzzle, Big Ben, almost complete, sat on the board of one of Solly's favorite brainstorms, rebranding a shipment of misprinted Monopoly sets where every property was jail into April Fool's kits. Ginger carried the puzzle and Glory followed behind, offering details about dinner. "I ordered Chinese, and I have a surprise planned for dessert. But I still need to work out the seating. Can't put your father next to Mr. Diggins. Maybe I'll put you between them. That might work."
"What doesn't Dad like about him?"
"Beats me," Glory shrugged. "It started before he met him. Evelyn told me very nicely, do not ask my brother about his job. Apparently, it's some kind of secret. I told your father, and his nose went right out of joint. Told him that it's a hoity-toity thing to say. Is it hoity-toity to be a spy? That's what I think he is. Imagine, a spy next door." Below them, the front door opened.
"Hello? Did everyone move away?"
"Yes, Solly," Glory called down. "We moved. We live on Mars now." Solly chuckled. He must have had a good day.
There was a moment of silence, and then he called up,
11 plates you got on the table? We got 11 people coming?"
"It's not hard to get 11 when you start from 6, Glory called, and then turned to Ginger. "Will you go down and tell him it's just the Clarks, Casper Diggins, and Ivan the director? That's all." This was a lot of bad news for Solly to take in. Paul Clark, who he said was a bore with his constant lectures on wall-to-wall carpets, Casper Diggins, who he'd already decided he didn't like, and Ivan, the director of her mother's community theater group, who Glory quoted every night at dinner like he was her own personal fortune cookie. Last night at dinner it was, "Ivan says a quiet exit speaks louder than 100 words. Glory had demonstrated that one, silently gliding out of the kitchen while the family strained to look enthusiastic. Looking neutral was always risky business around Glory, who could decide in a blink a darling daydreamer was really a pill. This wasn't a problem for Callie, with her swoony smile, or for Charlie, who could melt a woman's heart with his fairy broom eyelashes. Even Mimi got by with her Shirley Temple dimples. Ginger was another story. According to Glory, Ginger had a long face, not much you can do about that, plus eyebrows permanently knitted into a worried slant. As for her own face, Glory boasted that people often stopped to say her eyes made Paul Newman's look gray, though Ginger had never seen that happen. Maybe because it never had. Glory joined them in the kitchen.
Why so glum?
Who's glum? Solly asked. I just don't know why I have to have dinner with the whole neighborhood.
It's just Ivan and the Clarks and Mr. Diggins, who I think is darling. Today he volunteered to join the theater group. You know what a hard time we have finding men, Solly.
See? That's what I mean.
Solly tugged off his prescription shoes.
Who comes for a visit and right away joins a group? I don't trust him. I don't trust him for a minute.
For the love of God.
Glory headed toward the stairs, stepping around the children who'd gathered there to eavesdrop.
I need a vacation from this asylum.
What's wrong with Mr. Diggins?
Mimi asked. Is he a kidnapper?
They'd recently watched a public service announcement about kidnappers.
Does he drive a black car?
In the commercial, a black car slowly cruised down a street while a voice cautioned all children watching to stay alert.
Callie moved closer to Charlie. Is the kidnapper coming to dinner?
Nice going, Solly. Now you've got them scared of the neighbors.
Glory continued up the stairs to her bedroom to put on her face.
Don't worry.
Solly gave Callie a pat on her head.
Mr. Diggins is not a kidnapper. It's nothing like that. Nothing to be scared of. Sometimes I meet someone, he rubs me the wrong way. Your mother meets the same person, she thinks he's peachy keen.
He let out a sigh and disappeared into the den to see what Walter Cronkite had to say, leaving Ginger and her siblings alone with the scent of onions.
Chapter 2.
Being organized gave Ginger peace of mind. At work, the band-aids on the first aid shelf progressed logically from small circle to knuckle to knee-sized. At home, the mudroom cubby, which held suntan lotion and bug spray in the summer, was restocked on the first day of winter with Yap Tracks boot grippers and Vaseline intensive care. With each thing in its place, Ginger could focus on what mattered, her mission to keep everyone safe. First thing every school morning, Ginger would tape a flyer to her office door. Every day a different safety tip. It might be, you are the boss of your body on Monday, and on Tuesday, sneezes go in your elbow, please. At home, she turned a whiteboard affixed to the refrigerator into the family communications hub, with a daily post about the weather.
Sun is out, lotion up.
And a question of the day.
Did you remember to brush your tongue?
As a young child, Julia used to add pictograms, a crudely drawn hat or snowman next to the weather, a check mark or heart next to the question of the day. As she got older, her annotations changed. First to yes, then okay, and one day, duh. This past summer, Richard had suggested twice, first in a jokey voice, then in a more serious tone, that it was probably time to stop with the whiteboard. He reminded her that at 17, Julia found out about the weather the same way everyone else did, by checking her phone. Ginger disagreed. Not only did she believe Julia still liked waking up to her little notes, she was convinced her daughter would miss them if they suddenly stopped. At least that's what she thought before their Mount Washington trip. Now, a week after their return, Ginger woke up every day to find her messages had been erased.
It's rude, she complained. Ignoring it is one thing, but erasing it?
It was me, Richard confessed.
He gave her a goofy grin, the kind he knew always made her smile. Except now it didn't.
You erased it. You realize you erased our family meeting.
Maybe it's time we gave up those, too.
The suggestion startled her. Richard loved their family meetings. They were Ginger's idea. She organized the agendas, but Richard ran them, going through the topics in an orderly fashion, making sure everyone got a chance to voice their concerns, creating at least the feeling that decisions were reached by consensus.
"We can't give up the meetings now," Ginger said. "We need a meeting so we can apologize. So I can apologize. It's on me. I should have told her about Charlie and Callie. But how can I apologize if I can't get her alone in a room without Nick?"
"Just take her aside for a minute. And if Nick's there, so what?"
He offered another smile.
"And maybe ease up on the punishment? Maybe let her use the car again?"
How was that a good idea? It was the first week of school, and already Julia had missed curfew 3 nights in a row.
"You're suggesting what? We're supposed to just let her do..."
Julia walked into the kitchen and stopped. Her expression made it clear she knew they'd been talking about her.
"Morning,"
Ginger said, trying for a believable amount of cheer.
"Morning,"
Julia mumbled. She filled up a travel cup with coffee.
"I'm getting a ride to school."
She started out of the kitchen.
"Aren't you going to eat something?"
Ginger got up and opened the refrigerator.
"What about a clementine?"
"I'll pick up a bagel on the way."
Not a great choice, but Ginger let it go.
"Jules,"
she said to her daughter's back,
"we're having a family meeting tonight, 8 o'clock. Jules, did you hear me?"
Julia left the room and the front door slammed.
"She heard you," Richard said. "She nodded. I saw it. She'll be here."
Ginger shook her head.
"I don't think so."
Being right was not always fun. That's what Ginger was thinking right before Julia finally came home at 11 o'clock. Nick was right behind her. Ginger stood up.
"Sorry," she told the boy. "You have to go home. We're having a family meeting."
"You can stay if you want," Julia told him.
"That's okay," Nick said. "I'll go."
Julia saw him out. Their goodbye took 10 minutes. When she came back, she sank into the couch.
"Let the lecture begin."
"We're not here to lecture you," Richard said.
"I want to apologize," Ginger took over. "I should have told you about my brother and the accident and my sister. I have no excuse. I was wrong."
As if she needed to underline how much she didn't care, Julia let her neck go limp. Her daughter looked like a marionette on break. Ginger took a breath and reminded herself that there were scientific studies showing people in comas could hear what was being said around them. Surely, if a coma victim could hear, so could an oppositional teenager. She continued the conversation, now directing her words to the top of her daughter's head.
"In my family, growing up, there were things we just didn't talk about."
Julia snorted, and Ginger pretended she didn't hear it.
"There are things that are still hard for me to talk about. But I'm here now, happy to answer any questions you have. Everything is fair game."
She waited, but got no response. Even a snort would have been better than this. Silence.
"Hello?"
Julia sat up and met her mother's eyes.
"You don't get it. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to be living here much longer, so I don't care.
Are we done? I have a chem test tomorrow. I need to study."
"Then why were you out till 11?
Ginger looked over at Richard, hoping for help.
"Go," he said. "Go study."
"Thanks, Dad."
Julia ran upstairs and closed her door before her mother could veto the pardon. Ginger shook her head.
"That was not helpful,"
she whispered the next.
"She's changed. Something's different. Could it be drugs? Behavior change is a big warning sign for drugs."
"I don't think so."
Richard reached over and moved Ginger's hair away from her eyes.
"Can you take a vacation from worrying about her? For 1 week? Just try it. See what happens. Because...
He motioned to the space between Ginger and Julia upstairs. This isn't working.
Ginger might have taken offense at the implication, that Julia's behavior was her fault, except that Richard looked so sad. So she took the dare, a vacation from worrying for a week, meaning for 1 week she didn't say a single worry out loud. At the end of the week, when Richard said,
"Success! You didn't worry and nothing bad happened,"
she smiled back, relieved to see him look so happy. But on Monday morning, first day at work after a week of not worrying, Ginger got a bad news call from her friend Lydia, the nurse at the high school, about one of her favorite students. They weren't supposed to have favorite students, but all the nurses did. A boy, a 16-year-old, had gone to the hospital over the weekend after accidentally swallowing his magnetic tongue ring.
"They got the magnet out," Lydia told her, "but they had to cut open his intestines. Poor kid almost died."
"No magnetic tongue rings," Ginger wrote on the whiteboard that night before she went to bed. But in the morning, her message was replaced by one written in Julia's handwriting. "Sleeping at Angie's. See you tomorrow."
"Did she leave yet?"
Ginger asked as she sat down to her breakfast.
"Did you see what she wrote?"
Richard looked up from the paper.
"She's at Zero Period Gym, and yes, I saw it."
"She thinks we're going to fall for sleeping at Angie's?"
Ginger liked Angie, but she knew Angie had been dumped last summer for Nick, along with the rest of Julia's friends.
"Come on. What evidence do you have she's not going to sleep there?"
Ginger didn't need evidence. She had a built-in danger detector, and Richard knew it. The problem was that even when she knew something bad was coming, she couldn't be sure of what the bad thing would be. What she was sure of was this. Julia was not planning on sleeping at Angie's.
"We have to do something. I don't know how much more of this I can..."
Richard's phone interrupted her. He left the kitchen to take the call in private. Ginger hovered near the doorway but couldn't make out what he was saying. When he returned, he looked grim.
"What is it?" she asked. "Was it Angie's mom?"
"No. Work. New case."
"Oh. Boy or girl?"
"Boy and girl. Twins. 5 years old. I don't want to talk about it. I have to go."
He left to gather his things. This was something new. Richard had used her as a sounding board for work for as long as they'd been together. His job was how they'd met. She was a new nurse, it was her second month at her school, when Orny, the gentle giant of a custodian who spent his spare time polishing doorknobs for no other reason than that the children noticed, walked into her office holding hands with a little girl named Ruby. The tears on Ruby's 5-year-old face had only made her bruised eye more apparent.
"Go on," Orny prompted. "Tell Nurse Tangle what happened."
"I fell," Ruby said.
"Tell her what really happened."
"My mommy hit me."
The custodian stayed with Ruby, sitting at her side, big hand next to little, both coloring, while Ginger called the abuse and neglect hotline. The intake worker on the phone gave the case a status of immediate, so they didn't have long to wait. Orny was one of the few people who knew what happened next, that the investigator couldn't locate Ruby's father, who'd left the family long ago, or the grandmother who'd gone away, location unknown. So Ginger stepped up, applied for, and was given provisional license for foster care. Later that day, Ruby's older brother told the law guardian assigned to them that Ruby had lied. His mother, the boy insisted, had never hit anyone. Because the children's stories didn't match up, Ruby was assigned her own law guardian. That was Richard. They met for the first time when Richard came to interview Ruby at her foster home, Ginger's apartment. After Ruby was reunited with her grandmother, Richard made his next appointments with the girl in the office of her school nurse. 1 year later, when Ginger and Richard married, Ruby, by then in permanent custody of her grandmother, was their flower girl. They continued to be short-term foster parents in the early years of their marriage, but as the number of Richard's cases grew, it got harder to decide which child to take. Often Ginger was made mute by the choices, weighing the needs of the daughter with the abusive alcoholic mother against the needs of the son with the schizophrenic dad. They were between foster kids when Ginger got pregnant, and after Julia was born, they made the decision not to take in any more. Ginger would not deny that listening to the things that went wrong in a family sometimes took her breath away, and that, on occasion, when Richard shared details of a case of neglect, she'd gotten physically sick. But she didn't want this, for Richard to stop sharing altogether. She followed him into the small den where he was packing up his computer. "Tell me about the case," she said. "I want to know."
"What's the point? It's just another horror story."
She recognized the tone. It was his courtroom voice, the one he used when the summation was over to signal that nothing more could be said. "But..."
"No," he gave her a quick kiss on the cheek. "You have enough on your mind. Try and have a good day. Try."
It was during her 10-minute lunch break that she called Angie's mother, Shelley. Ginger and Shelley had been friends in that sort of way mothers made friends. Alliances formed when the girls were little, sharing information to prevent... Well, no one really knew what they were trying to prevent. They just had a vague sense of dread about what was coming. The scary tweens followed by the scarier teens. Pooling what they knew was their first line of defense. As it turned out, by the time the girls reached high school, friendships had shifted and reshuffled more times than any mother could keep up with, and soon the mother friendships faded too. It was still nice to catch up now and then when they bumped into each other in the supermarket or at the physical therapist. But it had been months, years, since Ginger had bumped into Shelley. If it was any other mother, she would have felt too awkward to call, but Shelley was a worrier too. She'd understand. Except she did not.
"Are you kidding? Julia is the most together of them all. I'm thrilled she's sleeping over. I wish Angie brought home more friends like her."
Ginger wondered when Shelley had last spoken to Julia.
"That's sweet. Of course I think she's great, too. It's just, she's got this boyfriend, and he's kind of a creep. So I wanted to make sure she really is staying with you, and not with him."
"Julia would never do that," Shelley told her, and then hurried off the phone. It was just before dinner the next night when Julia texted. "Sleeping at Angie's again." An emoji of a winking face followed. What that meant, Ginger had no idea. Against Richard's advice, she picked up the phone and made another call to Angie's mother.
"Is it okay with you that she's staying another night?"
"Of course," Shelley said. "Julia's the best. With her around, Angie's an angel. Last night, the two of them were so quiet, Dick and I forgot they were even here." Ginger hung up.
So naive. Shelley has no idea the girls snuck out.
"You don't know that," Richard said. "Can't you give her the benefit of the doubt?"
Ginger shook her head.
"I have no doubt."
She texted Julia 3 times that night and got 0 responses. But she didn't report that to Richard. At breakfast, she texted again. This time, she admitted it.
"I asked Julia if she wanted to come to my class tonight, but she didn't answer."
This would be the first night of the semester for Nurse Tangle's danger class. It was a popular offering at the adult school. There were over 100 classes in the fall session. Some, like gluten-free cooking and not your mother's mahjong, had enrollment spikes and troughs from term to term. But Nurse Tangle's danger class was always oversubscribed. Richard was baffled.
"Why would Julia want to come to your class?"
"I'm trying something new tonight,"
I'm going to start things off with a little talk about the danger of secrets. I thought Julia might... Suddenly, she wasn't sure what she thought.